It's that time. Wake up, Windsor. Wake up, Detroit. It's time for Big JD and Lippo in the morning. And here they are, your hosts, Big JD and Lippo.
You're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the morning.
I am Lippo.
And I am Big JD.
How are we doing today, Big JD?
I'm doing good.
You look good.
Why, thank you. So do you.
Thank you very much. I worked
You're
on
like
this.
Really fresh today. You got a fresh shirt on, which is really cool, by the way. You guys got a big tuba. What's with the big tuba?
Oh, this is my sit-down servant shirt. They were in town a couple months ago.
Quiet.
Sit down, servant.
Okay.
And, I look fresh. I haven't even shaved. I look like a...
I know, but it's your attire, I think. Like a fresh shirt and a nice fresh jacket that I never saw before.
Oh, you like my jacket?
Yeah. I have a black jacket almost identical to that.
And there's some colors on the back?
It's kind of like a rubbery looking thing.
Yeah, I know.
They're made out of, but they look rubbery.
Yes. Hmm? And do you have sex in that or?
Only with myself. In that one.
Okay, that's good. Glad to hear that. What's going on around here, Big JD?
Business as usual, man.
Business.
That's it, yeah.
The
Our big thing right now is the film that we're doing on refugee youth. So
right.
We spend a lot of time with that.
And you're going to be shooting this week for that?
We are shooting a few days this week, yeah.
That's awesome.
There's still quite a bit of shooting left, but that should go into post-production as soon as we wrap everything up. It was supposed to culminate into this play that's being put on at the old Walkerville Theater,
mm-hmm.
which is it's a multi-performance thing. I think two or three shows a day for 3 days or something like that.
Yeah.
And we're primarily shooting one, but we're also shooting the dress rehearsal because we can get on stage and everything for that.
Oh, right. That'll be cool.
Yeah. And then there's a night with dignitaries that are coming there and everything. So we'll be shooting some interviews and stuff like that. And
what makes a person a dignitary? Did they go to dignitary school?
They have fresh, new shirt and new...
That's right. That's
they have to be dignified.
Yeah.
To be a dignitary.
Most of the people I know aren't very dignified.
Hey, man. You talking about?
No, that would refer to themselves as dignitaries. Usually they're politicians for the most part, you know?
Mm-hmm. We're politicians.
But then there's people.
We're campaigning for Big JD and Lippo.
There we go.
Couldn't we be the mayors?
Asamea. That was a good segment of Detroit radio back in the day.
There you go.
So here we are back in the saddle again, and we're doing it like we never skipped a beat.
That's right.
That's awesome.
Like we never left.
Right. Do you feel good about it? That it's going to be a pretty, it's not going to be too taxing on you and you're not going to be able to put 100%.
Feeling good right now.
Yeah.
Show number two. It's actually show number one. We did a kind of an introduction show last week. Now, this is kind of a glam metal band from the 80s called Icon, which is probably something you never heard of. But they did put out a few records, and I thought they were pretty cool at that time.
They rang a bell with me.
This is World War. News. Music news. The Kiss reunion. Have you followed any of that?
There's no Kiss reunion.
There's not going to be a Kiss reunion.
No, they don't need to do that.
And apparently they're saying they're not even going to play for their induction to the...
Obviously, that's what they think of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They don't think of it as a very valid institution in the big scheme of things.
You think they think that? I don't know if they think that.
Why would...
That's a pretty big deal.
Is it?
I don't know. It's probably one of the biggest... things as far as
rock and roll
receiving
goes.
Yeah, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's pretty cool.
I think it's the whole institution itself. It's kind of, it's insider, pretty much. Like, why don't they have every ceremony at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Why don't they have a place for that? A stage and stuff. Ever been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No.
Yeah, it's dinky and it's little.
Yeah.
That building next to us is bigger.
Yeah?
Yeah. And the floors get smaller as you go up because it's in the shape of a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it is. And I'll tell you, when I went there, there was lots of Kiss stuff in there.
I'll tell you, if Kiss reformed, I mean, especially if that was the only show they were going to do, wow, I'd consider going to that. I'd like to see the original Kiss band.
Well, you'd never be able to get in.
Well, why not?
Because it's all the highfalutin, rootin' tootin' people get into that. And where's
all
it at?
All the dignitaries.
It's all, yeah, exactly. The rock and roll dignitaries. And it's at the Waldorf Astoria.
Well, that's fine. As long as I can see it on YouTube, I'm good. And you know you would. As it happens.
YouTube.
Yep.
There's a phenomenon.
And 45 years ago this month, February, Iron Butterfly released their Ball album.
Come on.
Iron Butterfly Ball.
Not 45 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was 6 years old. Did you want to mention that last thing you got cooking there? In your news?
Oh, Ted Nugent. Have you seen any Nugent lately? I saw him I guess it was on the internet. It wouldn't have been TV with Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott. Yeah, Nugent's been pretty outspoken lately and had some things. With his, I can't even say with his political views and agenda and whoever he's campaigning with and for, but he had some things to say about Detroit that had a lot of people fly off the handle about his own hometown being, I can't remember exactly what he said, but.
Well, he's pissed, no doubt.
And he's apologized about something that he said about Obama.
Called him a subhuman mongrel.
Subhuman mongrel, that's right. He apologized for that.
You don't want to call a black man any kind of animal name, do you?
Well, he's also the president of his country.
Yeah, the president. You know, you back in the day, you could not call the president anything but Mr. President.
Well, now they can also lock you up for anything they want. Can't they lock Ted Nugent up and saying that he's a terrorist for saying things like that?
Yeah, he's against.
They could, actually.
Oh, for sure. But he's dead.
They probably wouldn't because.
But if it was you doing that.
If it was me doing that, yeah. I'm not from that country, so. Am I not free to say whatever I want about the President of the United States?
Yes, you can.
But I wouldn't.
Of course
I respect the President of the United States, whoever he is.
Do you?
Yeah, I guess. You know.
I
to
don't.
Some degree.
Like.
I mean, they're a big dignitary.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You have to give him some respect, I suppose.
Mm. I know George W. He doesn't deserve any respect, I don't think.
Well, no, yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I don't.
You know what he is? He's a subhuman mongrel.
Oh, you're in trouble now, mister. So, yeah, there's a little bit of news, and we will move right along with Iron Butterfly from 69, It Must Be Love. Another on earth can be terrified. Something. All right, Lippo had sent me on a wild goose chase looking for a larger
cursor. Yep,
mouse pointer.
There is such a thing, I think, but I don't know where it's at right this minute. But okay. One thing I wanted to mention, well, there's a whole bunch of stuff in my head that I'm just saying, I'll mention that later. But at the beginning of the show, it says, "Wake up Detroit, wake up Windsor."
Yeah.
Well, this is not just for those people, this show.
Well, that's our area, though, but we're worldwide. We need to get maybe something new.
I think so. I'm all for that.
Original morning show ID.
Yeah, and it's
from
pro,
Taylor Kramer, by the way. Thank you, Taylor.
Okay, well, do you think Taylor would be willing to do gratis another one?
Sure, she would. I don't see why not.
Yeah, I think she's part of the thing that
she's part of the team.
Yeah, here. Part of the big Lippo and JD thing. Speaking of,
it's Lippo and JD.
it never was.
Lippo and Big JD in the morning. This doesn't sound right.
Of course it doesn't. Are you aware of the film that John Gillies is putting out?
I am, yeah.
Okay, you know you know about that.
I don't, yeah, yeah.
I'm just kind of curious. Are you going to that?
Is it in March or?
March 13th is the date.
I saw something about it at Capitol.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see that.
I'm going.
What's the date again?
March 13th.
Okay.
And he's been the whole progress of that film, he's been, updating it on Facebook on a regular basis. You know, I went and talked to Noam Chomsky and, was it Carmine or Vinny? Or both of them. I think he talked to both of them. Both of the Apice brothers.
Yeah, cool. Because I know Carmen was in town for the Blues Fest, actually.
Right. Yep. And there's a bunch of other cool dudes in there. Mark Farner and Jimmy McCarty.
Isn't Dick Wagner in there?
And Dick Wagner, yeah.
I'll have Dick Wagner on the morning show here because on one of those days, I think in March, he'll be at...
Caporelli's,
right.
Yeah, doing a...
Book signing and workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have him on a show in the morning.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that. You did interview him for the You Talking to Me show, though, correct?
I did, yeah. And then we had him on the morning show as well for something he was in town for again. Maybe it was a book signing or something. I can't remember.
Where does Dick live?
Dick lives in Arizona.
Mm.
But he spends lots of time in Windsor and Detroit. So yeah, keep an eye out or an ear out for Dick Wagner on Big JD and Lippo in the morning.
You're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the morning.
Yeah, but that premiere of the film, it's kind of like on an agenda. So there's like a welcoming, and then there's a...
as it should.
Yeah, and like...
It's a local...
Serving booze there, and then they're going to show the film, and there's going to be a question answered. Then there's going to be jamming. They're going to be rocking our face off.
Oh, I didn't know there was going to be music. Yeah, that's cool.
Dick and Dusty... D'Annunzio is going to be there as well.
That's a cool aspect to have in there.
I think so. I think it's going to be an event.
A jam, yeah, cool.
Mr. Chill's going to be in the movie, and Gordy Johnson's in the movie.
I saw a list. Nice list of people in the film, for sure.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very cool. Looking very forward to it, for sure.
Right on, man.
Do you want to talk about some specific aspect about music, which, you know, we'll probably touch on something every week that we do this show? Right. So you wanted to talk about, you know, maybe we'll talk about music lessons 1 week, and we'll talk about flying with your musical equipment 1 week, and, you know, on and on. I see that you have real drums versus e-drums. Mm-hmm. Now, e-drums are the ones that you mail to somebody?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Electronic drums.
Yeah. It's a whole email platform.
E-drum platform.
Yeah, that was one of the topics of discussion, was real drums versus electronic drums.
Have you ever seen a live band play electronic drums?
I have. Yeah. But usually, that's something like some big concert on television, sometimes a late night talk show type thing, or a, you know, they're not usually, or the kind of music that we might generally listen to. You don't see somebody playing an electronic drum kit. Not usually.
No. A big aspect of electronic drums for just working musicians is usually the idea that you can practice without bothering anybody. That is one, you know, functionality of having the e-drums.
They're fairly quiet, but for practice, you can get actual practice pads and, you know what I mean? Like a kit that's made for practicing that's a lot less expensive than an actual electronic drum kit, which... You know, the cost of those things can climb pretty high.
How high?
But primarily studio work. In a lot of situations, you'll find that's where you find an electronic drum kit, or people using electronic drum kit is in the studio.
Because they're easier to control?
Easy to control, easier to record to MIDI.
So you record to MIDI a drum, the song, part of a drum, and then you can actually put any sound on top of it. Like, you can make your snare after the fact.
You can do
like
it after the fact, or you can do it before the fact, or whatever. Like, you can just use sampled drums so that you can use any kick, any snare, any cymbals that you want. real sampled instruments. And and the electronic drum kit would play those samples. So that's a real amazing factor of an electronic drum kit, is that you can change those sounds before or after the fact, as well as recording MIDI. And you can record either audio or MIDI or both. And what the MIDI allows you to do is to change all those sounds, but also change a lot of things within MIDI that's very controllable, and also to move those hits around. If somebody's late or early, you can just take that note and move it. Whereas you can't really do that with audio unless there's steps that you can take to do that, which is slicing up the whole audio track.
But you don't have to do that with MIDI.
Right. Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of people out there who I know, and you were probably in the same boat back in the day. As soon as you mention the term MIDI. Think they're
gay.
No, the MIDI thing. I was going to say electronic drums.
MIDI too. MIDI and electronic drums.
Yeah. So a lot of
that's
people.
That's what I used to think.
As soon as you hit, here's the word MIDI, it was like, oh, it kind of just glazes over people's head. Like, oh,
yeah, they don't fully get it or understand it or, yeah. But and it is kind of confusing, actually. There's a lot to it. There's that just a general idea of what MIDI is. But then over and above that, it can get pretty complicated.
Because it has so many...
It's very detailed. Yeah. You know, MIDI contains a lot of information.
Yes.
And it's all, you know, like information-based, digital. It's all, you know, in the digital domain, and it's a lot different than audio, what audio is. And it makes it sort of confusing.
So you kind of have to wrap your head around the whole idea of MIDI in general.
And then once you do, though,
it seems like you're working in a different realm almost. It's like you're not even working the same
really
way.
It really is a whole other platform altogether than really working with audio. Of course, most of the audio applications nowadays, they coexist pretty well. MIDI and audio, and the way that we work with MIDI and audio, but yeah, it's two different realms in working with sound. Talked about Kiss a little bit earlier on the show, and this is from Music from the Elder. It's called The Oath.
Yeah.
So now you were going to discuss the difference between e-drums and just electronic drums that, you know, some kid might buy for $500 at a guitar center.
For short form purposes, e-drums, but electronic drum kit, yeah, you can get a cheap Simmons or a Lesis kit are usually generally a little bit cheaper than some of the Yamaha and Roland kits, but they get pretty elaborate. And now a lot of the drums, and I don't have a great kit. I have an older Roland kit.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we can run that, record that kit MIDI and use anything that we want as far as sounds or anything like that. So it's, in that respect, it's not any different than, you know, a brand new top line one. But the pads are different. The sounds are different in the actual MIDI, the unit.
Yep.
Because the unit actually has sounds too. So, I mean, if you just put headphones on and wanted to jam, there's all kinds of sounds in there. And you can change those. And some of the kits allow you to just put your own samples in as well.
Very cool.
And then use it right inside the system. A friend of mine, Rob, has a newer kit that's really cool. And then, like I said, you can really, I mean, if you watch some of the videos and stuff on YouTube and look up electronic drum kits or the Roland e-kits and stuff like that, they got mesh pads and everything. And so they're a lot more, you get that realistic feel,
yeah,
you know, of a drum,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, is a really big thing for drummers. When somebody can play on a kit like this one, which I have like the rubber pads, got to give a drummer some kudos for being able to play well on them. And the right. guys that I've had come in and that they're great drummers. And it's somebody that has something against. If you have something against an electronic drum kit right from the beginning, like this isn't real, it's not going to sound like this, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't feel the same. You know what I mean?
Right.
But most of the guys that I have come in will be like, I don't care what it is. You know what I mean? I'll just play.
Right.
And it's usually great.
Yeah, I've heard some of the stuff and it's...
It's kind of a mindset playing with an electronic drum kit as well. So... You have to have the mindset,
right?
All those differences between the real kit and this kit.
Going into it, you have to know that the end result is going to be at least as good as playing on a real
kit. And that's kind of what it's about, right? The end result, you know, for me it is anyway, you know what I mean? For a drummer, yeah, it's about the playing and the feel. And at least on my kit, there's some things that I understand and realize that they can't necessarily do. It's, you know what I mean? There's some little nuances and things like that.
Yep.
And I get that. And that's a little bit of the sacrifice, you know, for using the electronic drum kit. But man, it sounds a killer.
You're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the morning.
So we're going to play some music. There was a theme with the tunes that I brought to the show today. It was tunes that were around on FM radio. In the 70s, back in the day, DJs weren't, told what to play. You know, nowadays, a DJ comes in and he has to play this song once an hour, you know, this song once every 2 hours, whatever. There's a list he's giving, he just puts them on, and he can't talk too long. But back in the day, the DJs would take these new albums, they bring them home, and they say, these five tunes sound pretty decent. I think my listeners would dig these tunes. One of those tunes is... Gone, Gone, Gone by Bad Company, and we're going to give that a listen right now.
Take her on a cruise, yeah.
There we go. Bad Company.
Yeah, that's cool. That's one of those tunes that I remember just being on the radio. You know, you'd hear that a couple times a week.
Yeah. And in talking about, you know, what you're talking about DJs being able to play, you know, kind of what they wanted in the past. It's like that Kiss song that, you know, you don't really hear that on the radio or anything like that. And I want to say at some point I maybe heard that one song from that Elder album, but they never toured for the album or anything. It was so bad.
The album was so bad?
Yeah.
Or it was such
a
departure?
It was like 81 or something like that. It was just like, I don't think it ever did anything for them, and they never toured for that particular record or anything.
Right. It was such a departure from...
And it was a departure too, yeah, for sure.
Which, you know, bands got to make departures to move on, right? You can't
But
always...
you know, it's kind of interesting though, and at that time that it was, they had orchestra stuff, and it was like a theme album, like a story, you right. know, kind of thing in that. And that was sort of before its time. Because, I mean, that thing, that sort of got big later when everybody was, like, you know, using orchestras. Like, Metallica even used an orchestra and did an album. And Kiss did again later. Kiss and Symphony. And
sure.
I can't, you know, recall off the top of my head all the bands that have done that, but a lot of them. And then, again, though, Deep Purple did that in the 60s, so.
And The Who did it whenever in the 70s with Quadrophenia.
Yeah,
and that was
yeah.
a story from beginning to end, and there was all kinds of horns and strings and stuff in that as well.
But again, just depends on the album and the songs and all that stuff, I guess, whether it's going to take off or not.
And I don't know, you know, like I say, bands have to not transform themselves, just move on to the next thing. They can't rest on their laurels all the time. And I think that's what a lot of bands are doing right now. You know, the record companies tell a lot of bands that are making it right now, you know, keep it on that same path and make sure you write a single in there. Where's the single in that package? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So the music industry, which is another thing that we could just go off on, is just so broken right now. And I feel kind of not bad, but I feel kind of excited at the same time that the music industry is becoming less of an industry and more of a grassroots thing that'll take on a life of its own and do something else altogether. But unfortunate for a lot of the bands that... we're used to a revenue stream based on album sales. I was listening to a local guy here, Mr. Chill from Big Sugar. He did a piece with one of the dudes at St. Clair. They have the thing downtown where it's a media arts deal. Mm-hmm. And it's 5 minutes with is the name of the program or the segment of something or whatever. I'm not exactly sure what context that's in, but it's 5 minutes with somebody. And this was 5 minutes with Kelly Hoppe. And he was talking about... you know, his past, and the dude asked him what he felt was one of the biggest changes that happened to the music industry from when he started with Big Sugar to today. Mm-hmm. And he went on to say, you know, it's the revenue stream, the money that an artist could rely on to, you know, put food on the table for his family. It's gone.
And now an artist truly is working for himself because he has to find ways to create a revenue stream for himself.
Right.
Or herself.
I think it takes a lot more effort, a lot more work, but the means to do so, it's all in place, I think. And I think there's room for other vehicles for people, for artists to move their music or for mm-hmm. new, you know, stuff to come around. And we're going to play, I'm going to bring new music to the table for sure.
New music to the table and local music to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this too. And so, you know, podcasting is one vehicle, which... You know, I kind of wish it'd be bigger or better or... No, not better, because it doesn't get any better than this, does it?
No.
I didn't think so.
Of course not.
Because there's also, you know, there's the Spotify's and the RDO's and the Slacker radio. You know, it does a lot for
And that's something we'll talk about in the future on shows as well, or on a show, are these...
Services,
yeah, to listen to music and have your music...
Find a new audience.
...played and aired and... distributed. And because we can play what we want when we want, what else have you got lined up for us today?
Another tune that is from the 70s as well is one of my favorite bands, Cheap Trick. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, did you hear any of the thing they did in Vegas? They did the whole Sgt. Pepper's.
Right.
They had like 60 people on stage at once. Mm-hmm. And they had a few guest artists in there as well. And they reproduced it pretty much note for note. It's amazing what they did. Mm-hmm. So we knew that there was a lot of Beatles influence in their music, of course. You know, the harmonies and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But they did a tune off of their...
Because, I mean, they did Sgt. Pepper or something like years and years and years ago. 80s.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this tune here is called Taxman Mr. Thief. And of course, in the actual Beatles tune, it's Mr. Taxman, Mr. Heath. So they speak of that in this tune here. And this is, I forget what album this is off. One of the very first ones, for sure. They're very young looking on the album cover. So yeah, this is Mr. Taxman.
And good looking, I might add.
Just like you, Big JD.
Jesus.
Time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
My guest today is superstar rock DJ Anita Gevinson, running in wild rock and roll circles and once engaged to rocker Warren Zevon. She's here to talk to us about that, the old days in radio, and her book, You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio, My Wild Rock and Roll Life. Welcome to the show, Anita.
Well, thank you so much. What a great introduction. Happy to be with you, Big JD.
Thanks. It's really cool to have you.
I'm still trying to get over the fact that you call yourself Big JD, but I love it. I want you to know. I'm laughing with love. Okay.
It's better than small JD.
Yes, it is.
People might get the wrong impression. It's really cool to have you on, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about the old days in radio. I'm thinking it must have been a blast, and we'll get into that shortly, but let's talk first about your book. You Turn Me On, okay. I'm a Radio, My Wild Rock and Roll Life. It was released, I guess, in 2012, I believe?
Yes, on Black Friday. I self-published it. Amazon.com, I self-published it. And I got to say that I never intended to be a writer or to write my story, but as I looked back on my life, I realized how special it was and how different it was from other people's. And I realized that I had great stories about very famous people who are not only famous then in the 80s, but are still famous and still around today. And my stories are a little bit different than the ones I had read about some other female DJs, although there are not a lot of us. And that was another reason I wanted to write the book. But I thought it was such a unique time and I had such unique stories that I had to put them out there because mine was all about fun and sex and drugs and rock and roll. And I thought, I own that. I'm not apologizing for that. And I made it through and everything is fun. And it was fun and games and nobody lost. And I thought, I got to put this out there for people that lived through it and for people that weren't as lucky as I was to live through those times. So I decided to write that book and I put it out there. And I'm glad I did. At first, I was a little bit like, I don't know if I want to be so honest, but you didn't read anything that made you cringe, right?
No.
Okay.
Not too
all
much.
Right.
I obviously had a lot of stories. How was it for you, like, reliving so much of that in writing the book? You know, you got to reflect on maybe some things that you hadn't even thought about in a long time.
Oh, you're right about that. My joke was that I got to write this stuff down before I forget it.
Sure.
And what happened was once I opened the floodgates, because my career was so quick and it burned so hot, so fast, that the only way I could get past it when I had to was to block a lot of the badness and the negativity out. And I was forced to bring all of those stories back. And at first it was too weird. I had to put it away. I had to take what I had written and put it aside, and I was not going to do it. And then another book came out by the ex-wife of Warren Zevon, and I didn't like that book at all. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to spew negativity and, you know, be toxic, but let's just say I did not like what I read. And I thought the only thing I can do now is to write it the way I know it to be. And I went back in with a different perspective, and that's how I did it. That's how I got through it. It was something I then felt I had. It went from something I felt I would like to do to something I felt I had to do. Mm-hmm. Wanted to set the record straight.
And let's talk a little bit about you and Warren Zevon, a rock legend, obviously. And
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. You leaving him in rehab. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. Well,
relationship.
Well, you know, first of all, the only reason I wrote about my past and my childhood was because it kind of explains, I guess, how I ended up leaving Warren Zevon in rehab. It sounds like a stretch, but by the time I had met Warren Zevon, I had already had a lot of tragedy in my own family, and Warren was so much of a genius and so amazing and certainly the love of my life, and I'd never felt love like that. He went from being the best boyfriend to the man I was actually going to marry. I wasn't even going to ever get married, but he became that to me. Mm-hmm. But he was also very damaged, and for me, it was a repeat of what I had just gone through with my own family, and I was unable to go through it again at that time. And when he did go into rehab, everyone was so hopeful, and I had already been sort of played out and couldn't be there for them. And it's one of the biggest regrets that I had in my life, and I own it, and I know he forgave me at the end, but I just was unable to bring any more of that into my life. I was not sure that he would ever recover, and you don't recover, but that he could ever live without being an alcoholic. And he had a lot of other problems too. And I just couldn't be there for him. But I think you can understand that at some point back that in those days, even though it was the 80s, we didn't really know as much as we do now about bipolar or about medications or about dysfunction or about alcoholism. And so, you know, I did the best I could at the time. Mm-hmm. But yes, he was the love of my life. I met him before I even got into radio. And we kept circling each other and having these rendezvous until finally it was our time to live together. And Warren actually moved to Philadelphia and lived with me so I could do my radio show. And then we toured the country and we toured Europe together. And I wrote all about it in the book and all of the funny things. It was so much fun to be around. And as you can tell by a lot of the famous and wonderful people who have their choice of people to hang out with, so many of them chose him. And he had so many lovely women in his life. And, you know, the men that have a lot of women in their life, half of them are men who really love women, and the other half are men who really hate women when you have a lot of women in your life. And Warren was a man who really loved women. He really did. He was just a wonderful, wonderful person and gone way too soon. So I think everybody should vote to get him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hey, I think he belongs cool. there. Yeah.
Obviously, people can find out more about that in your book, of course. And you also had a life-changing encounter with Bob Dylan. Tell us what that was.
Well, that was incredible. Meeting Bob Dylan changed my life. I found out about the Bruce Springsteen band, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, in the mid-70s. And I became friendly with Danny Federici, Danny Federici, who was the member of the E Street Band from the beginning and played the organ and all those wonderful accordion parts. And I became friendly with him. And in 1980, I was living in Los Angeles. I was unemployed. I had nothing going on. Everything was going wrong. But Bruce was coming to town for a series of shows, and Danny called me. He and his wife, we got together. I went to every show during that October. And one night, as I was returning to my seat after the intermission, I noticed someone was in it. It was Bob Dylan. I took him backstage after the show so he could see Bruce. We had 10 minutes. We had to wait. And I told him about my whole life. And I asked him advice. And he gave me advice. And I took it. And my life changed incredibly for the better. And I became a famous DJ in Philadelphia, and it was all because Bob Dylan said, go back to Philly.
How cool to have it be advice from Bob Dylan, right?
Right? I know. I know. I feel like, could this really have happened? But it really did. And unlike most of the stories, I don't have a photo of this, but you have to trust me, it really happened.
Now, you're a DJ for a long time. Are you still doing that now? Or I know you've been doing the Ask Anita. I saw web videos online. What are you up to?
Yes. Well, I'm doing my once a week Ask Anita podcast, like a webcast. What do you call it when you're just doing it and nobody, it's not interactive? I guess you call it a vanity project. I turn the camera on and I take questions off the Facebook page and I answer them. And I do that once a week. And I've been lucky enough to be able to retire early, and I'm kicking back and writing the screenplay for my book. I hope someday I can be on your show and tell you about when that's going
to
happen.
Well, I hope someday I'm going to be able to go to the theater and watch the movie.
Okay, I'll buy you a ticket.
Sounds great. I'm going to hold you to that.
All right, you got it.
I want to ask you about the old days in radio and the freedom DJs had or maybe didn't have. I know in your book you say when you started out, things were pretty much automated for you. And now I didn't know if that was it only because maybe you were, you know, when you started out, you were inexperienced and it was an easy way to have you on air. Or was it actually that way? I mean, were DJs allowed to play whatever they wanted back then? Because it's not like that now, unless I guess you're in maybe a campus community station or something like that, can play whatever you want.
Unless your listeners support it, exactly. Yeah. Well, I came in right at the end of that. I was lucky enough when I switched from the automated station that I started working, that was WCAU, and that was WCAU FM, and they were trying something out that didn't take. It didn't work. They had a great big machine with 8 tracks, and they'd stick them in, and they were trying to keep the rotation from being too much, because we were playing disco music and R&B back in those days. Okay. That was not, and that's where I was lucky enough that I didn't have to worry about the music, and I could work on my, you know, what I was going to say and how I was going to present myself, because I had no training really as a DJ. I just went to a little quick course. So that was good for me to be like a training job. But then when I got over to WMMR, for a second, I was still one of those DJs that would show up an hour before their show, pull out the albums that the former jock had played. If I hadn't been listening, which I probably was, they were pulled out of the wall, so you knew they had initialed what cut they played, so you knew to avoid it. And I could still, can you imagine, walk in, and from the wall of albums, I could pull out what I wanted to play, and I could set up a show based on my feelings, based on the weather, based on whatever. It was glorious. And then, you know, in the blink of an eye, the program directors, in my opinion, got tired of being fired. So they started hiring consultants that would buy them a little time because they could blame somebody else for the low ratings. So, you know, they could say it wasn't my fault. The consultant told me to play Foreigner three times an hour, you know. So they hired these consultants who I guess felt like they knew what they were doing, but let's be honest, even if they had the system that worked in a certain city, it's not going to work everywhere. You can't, just like food and just like everything else, it changes from city to city. You've got to know who you're talking to, and you, of course, there's going to be music that everybody plays, but I think they ruined the local feel of the station, and it was the beginning of the end. But yes, for a beautiful second there, I got to do that. It was all about the segue. It was all about the connection. Yeah, it was glorious. It really was. And you really, it was like being a great chef. You know, everybody knows the ingredients of spaghetti sauce, and there are 1,000 Italian restaurants out there. But not everybody is hired to come in and be a chef and make spaghetti sauce. You have to be a little bit better at it than everybody else, you know, and with the same basic ingredients. And that's what the job of a DJ used to be. So that's why I was so appalled, shocked, and offended when I got fired so that Howard Stern could take over.
Howard who?
That's what I said. Yeah. Because we didn't know, you know, syndication was just beginning in those days. So you couldn't hear any other show unless you could get it on the radio,
right,
if you were within range. And the people in Jersey, some of the people in South Jersey somehow were getting to hear him. But I didn't know who the heck he was, and was quite blindsided by it. And thought, well, this isn't going to last. You know, nobody wants to hear somebody call somebody fat. This is not going to happen. They're not going to be able to do. No one's going to love that. I don't blame Howard. You know, I just think the listening audience, I don't know what happened there. We just took a huge step back for a while. And I was like, oh, this will be over in a minute, which shows you my instincts. I made every mistake he could possibly make. I turned down the show after him. Can you imagine? I turned that down and ran to the West Coast. But hey, what can I tell you?
It's been a long minute for Howard.
Yes, it has. God bless him. But yeah, listen, he married a wonderful woman who is as good as he is not good. And I think she's rubbed off on him. And I know they save animals, and I wish him well.
And out of curiosity, when you mentioned city to city and up and down the dial, what did you think of the old TV show WKRP in Cincinnati?
Loved it. Yeah. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Loved it back when I'm old enough that I saw it when it was on for the very first time, you know, and I loved it then. But again, I did not grow up with aspirations to be a DJ. For me, it was just the music that I loved. And yeah. I grew up, I loved the radio, and listening to the radio changed my life. It was the first time I heard the Beatles. I was on the playground in grade school when I heard I Want to Hold Your Hand for the first time. And I was like, stuck the dodgeball game, you know. And so for me, it was the music. But yeah, absolutely. You know, and being in Philly, great city for music, great city for radio. So yeah, absolutely. When that happened and I got that whiff of how it would be to be a DJ, my brain went right back to Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap and everybody. Yeah. And oh my gosh, that is so true to this day. That is the stereotypical program director and stereotypical general manager. And yeah, it turned out, it really is. They should put that in the, what do they do when they bury stuff, you know?
time capsule type thing?
Time capsule, like yes. You put it in a time capsule.
Yeah, I always wondered how true to life it was to a radio station back then.
Oh, so true. So true. There was a Johnny Fever at every station. They, you know, of course they couldn't show the drugs. They kind of showed the drugs back then, that how open it was.
Yeah.
But absolutely, you had your slick salesman. Oh, the Herb Tarlick? Are you kidding? That suit he wore was replicated by every salesperson that I ever met.
Yeah.
And I had a big sign. I made a big sign, because I was a little Johnny Fever, okay? I made a big sign and put it on the studio door that covered up the window that you could look in.
Yeah.
If you're wearing a suit, don't even knock. That's how bad I was back then. Oh yeah, I was. Yeah, that it was us against them, absolutely. And the movie FM, that also was very true to life. That was very true to life. Yeah, we didn't ever get up on the roof or whatever they did. But there is a famous story about a disc jockey that was on the staff that I worked at WMMR, Michael Pearson, and when they fired him, he locked himself in the music room where all the albums were, and they had to get a fireman with an axe to get him out of there because he was not leaving. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, my life was an episode of WKRP on many occasions. Yeah, it certainly was.
And listeners can find those episodes in You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio, My Wild Rock and Roll Life. And your book is available at Amazon and...
It's only available at Amazon.com,
okay.
But you can, it's very easy to get. There's a soft cover edition. It's very inexpensive. And then there's a Kindle edition that's very beautiful. They made a CreateSpace. If anybody out there is contemplating self-publishing, I say go for it. CreateSpace is the Amazon.com. And I mean, they're not paying me to say this. I'm just saying it was inexpensive. It was easy. And it's a great feeling. If you got a story and you want to get it out there, they can help you with that. And they do a great Kindle version. A lot of photos in the book, and a lot of them are much better in the Kindle. Some of them are in color, and I wanted to make the photos bigger, but I was on a budget. So, you know, when I make some money from the screenplay, I'll make a much bigger, better version of the book. But for now, yeah, Amazon.com. You just have to type in my last name, Gevinson, or the title of the book, and they'll deliver to you. You don't even have to get out of bed.
And they can just search you on YouTube?
Yes, I have some YouTube videos of my Ask Anitas, and also on Facebook. I will friend you if you like, and you can watch them every week.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for being on the show, Anita. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I really wish you great success with your book.
Thank you so much, and we'll do it again.
You're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the Morning.
Okay, we're back, and we're just about ready to wrap things up here on the show.
The last tune we're going to play, though, this show is by a guy who I was really into back in the 70s, and his name is Peter Frampton.
Yep.
He was just on the...
Who's Peter Frampton?
Peter Frampton, he was in a band called Humble Pie at one point.
Absolutely.
And he had his own band called Frampton's Camel. And then he came out with the album Frampton, which was kind of like a solo thing, and it was just him. I think there was a carryover of a couple dudes from Frampton's Camel in that band as well. And he was a rock dude. But I think after the I'm In You album...
With rock and blues, dude.
Yeah, with the no shirt on, everybody just thought, oh, sell out. It sucked, and it was all downhill, which happened to so many bands. It's a pity. Pity and a crying shame. But anyway, I was really into him back then. He was a guitar guy, had a 3-pickup Gibson Les Paul. He played black. It was cool.
Didn't he play double neck as well?
He may have had a double neck.
I want to say I saw pictures of him with a double neck, too.
SG or?
Yeah, I want to say that, but...
I don't know. I'm not sure either. Anyway, the album Frampton had, I'm going to say, 3 songs on there that were on the radio all the time. There was I Give You Money.
Mm-hmm.
Baby, I Love Your Way. Oh, and Show Me the Way was on there as well. But there was also this tune on here, which is kind of a
rock. What was with him in The Ways?
In The Ways?
Baby, I Love Your Way. Ways. Why don't you show me the way?
Yeah, I know.
I want you. That's a good song, though.
Yeah, he was a decent songwriter. This album was recorded in 8 days in a house in England. And this tune here is called Nowhere's Too Far for My Baby.
Nowhere's Too Far for My Baby. And we'll leave you with that and see you next week, right?
Yeah, thanks a lot for listening, everybody.
Have a great day, and be sure to join us here next week, same time, same place, for Big JD and Lippo in the morning.